From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For like an hour and a half yesterday, I thought, oh, I know what he's doing. I know what Trump is doing with this abortion cataclysm. I mean, I know it looks like a cave-in at the policy mine, and it looks like he's trapped beneath the rubble, but what he's doing, it's actually kind of clever. He's going to let everybody keep talking about a national ban and draconian state bans like in Arizona, and then he's going to swing back towards that 15-week national ban idea or something that will make him look moderate because all of the Republicans have literally gone back to what the laws read in 1864. This is just clumsy ad hoc shifting of the Overton window. This is not the mine caving in on Trump. This is actually that once a year thing where he does something kind of clever. Nope. He's not being clever. It's a mine cave in. The abortion policy mine has caved in on Trump, and he is buried in the rubble. There is no plan, there is no tacking to the middle, there is no looking moderate, and there is no Overton window. It is down there in the debris with him. Because Trump matter-of-factly announced that the 1864 absolute ban reinstated by the Arizona Supreme Court was too much, and confidently, he was sure it would get fixed promptly, and the Republicans in the Arizona State Senate and the Arizona State Legislature then told Trump to go shove his Overton window up his ass. First, this is him on the tarmac in Atlanta saying no way he'd ever sign a national ban and shrugging no, and then saying the part about Arizona tempering the ban there just before Arizona Republicans told Trump to go F himself.
Sure that the governor and everybody else are going to bring it back into reason, and that will be taken care of, I think, very quickly.
So Arizona Republicans listened to their man, dispassionate J. Trump, and as a Republican made a motion to repeal the ban, all the other Republicans promptly put the House into recess. And the Arizona Speaker said he was opposed to a repeal, and he would never permit a vote on a repeal. And in the Arizona Senate, the Republicans simply removed the repeal bill from the day's agenda. And Trump is screwed. And Carrie Lake is screwed. And the Republican Arizona Congressman Juan Ciscomendi is screwed. And Republican Congressman David Schweikert is screwed. And the best part is that even if they all figure a way out of this mess, The damage has been done, and anybody who forgot that it was Trump's Supreme Court that made all of this possible, and anybody who forgot that it was Trump who said the states could take care of this, well, he would stay above the fray and protect states' rights, and instead, Arizona activated a law that they passed the year before Mark Twain published his first short story, and then Trump's response was to immediately tell that state to change what it had decided. How exactly is that letting the states handle it? And oh, by the way, his own Republicans then ignored him. Anybody who forgot any of that now remembers it. It is time for me to repeat my mantra. Democracy is preserved less by the efforts of those of us fighting to protect it and more by the stupidity of those seeking to destroy it. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, has Trump never looked more stupid than right now. And if you think that's going badly for him, he's on some kind of legal streak here in New York City. For the third consecutive day, a different judge has denied Trump's bid to stall the start of the Stormy Daniels hush money election interference trial next Monday. The week began with an appeals judge laughing him out of court over a demand for a change in venue, because he can't get a fair trial in what was his home till a few years ago. Tuesday, a different appeals judge refused to delay the trial or remove the gag order after he tried to get the judge's daughter killed. Now it is an appeals judge number three, who in the same day, A, accepted Trump's request for a hearing on delaying the trial because Judge Merchan wrongfully failed to recuse himself, B, conducted an emergency hearing same day, and C, gave Trump an emergency kick in the ass. Denied. On the other hand, Defendant J. Trump did walk into an Atlanta Chick-fil-A yesterday and asked, "Can I have 30 milkshakes and also some chicken?" And in a surprise bigger than the chaos in Arizona, and managing to lose the same appeal three times in 3 days in New York, he did not drink all 30 milkshakes and eat all the chicken himself. He gave them out to customers and to staff. You forgot the paper towels, pal. Trump's next bid to help somebody out at a Chick-fil-A may be to get Speaker Mike Johnson a job at one of them. As Marjorie Taylor Dolores Umbridge Greene continues to torture Johnson to political death over Ukraine and FISA and the Mayorkas impeachment stunt, we get a glimpse of whatever is going on behind the curtain in MAGA land when CNN reported that Johnson is headed tomorrow to Mar-a-Lago to hold a joint news conference with Trump about, quote, election integrity. In other words, Trump has blackmailed Mike Johnson into doing something Mike Johnson did not want to do. And it is about, somehow, the Trump-manufactured fantasy world in which he was the victim of election fraud, or he is the victim of election fraud, or he will be, or he's selling sneakers with election fraud written on the tongue of the shoe, or God knows what. Whatever it is, it will not be pretty. And the not prettier it is, the more likely Trump will let Johnson metaphorically live. I mean, who knows? Trump may want Johnson to declare that Trump was the rightful winner of the 2020 election and the 2012 election and 2008 and 1876. And this does not need much setup. Trump has gone back to the anti-Semitism well. If you missed him late Monday night explaining to one of the endless right-wing propagandist streaming hosts, whom they seemingly manufacture by the gross carload lot at a secret plant somewhere, as he explained to this guy that anybody who is Jewish who votes for Joe Biden doesn't love Israel and needs to be spoken to. And the spoken to part was that sinister and threatening. Trump clearly thought that went well because he repeated it to the national media, too, in Atlanta.
He is not supporting Israel. He has abandoned Israel. And any Jewish person that votes for a Democrat or votes for Biden should have their head examined.
I am preaching to the choir with the choir's own hymnals here. But this is the essence of anti-Semitism, what he just said. Jewish people to Trump are loyal first to another country, not to the United States. Second time he has implied this in the 36-hour span. Said it to a group at the White House at a Hanukkah event one year, talks to American Jews, refers to their country, means Israel. He's an anti-Semite. Anti-Semite. And most importantly, the Biden campaign needs to call him that. There is a catalog of 35 years of anti-Semitism, going back to when he kept that book of Hitler speeches in that little table next to his bed, according to the first wife, the wife near the first T. The president does not have to call him an anti-Semite. Surrogates doing so will suffice. But this is going to be, one way or the other, the dirtiest campaign in American history, even if Joe Biden never says a word. And Trump's vulgarity gives Biden license. When they go low, we go high. Unless Trump leaves his middle open to a swift kick right in his Chick-fil-A. And by the way, if you're wondering where all this stuff, the abortion issue, not only threatening to consume Trump's campaign, but now showing Trump to have lost control of the issue, and to him somehow not being dogmatic enough about it, and the amazing legal losing streak, and oh, by the way, the hot and cold running anti-Semitism, if you wonder how this fits into political television news, it don't. And it don't because the TV network news operations are focused on the real issue here, why Trump and Biden have failed to do their duty as patriotic Americans and presidents, why they have yet to commit to made-for-television pie fights, or as the networks call them, quote, debates, unquote. We, the undersigned national news organizations, urge the presumptive presidential nominees to publicly commit to participating in general election debates before November's election. Reads a draft of a letter composed by ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox News, and NBC to be sent to the Biden and Trump campaigns. Participating in general election debates before November's election. You think that maybe they could have presidential debates after the election? Yes, it's idiotic. No, I'm not surprised. Biden has refused to commit to debates because he and his people rightly think the Commission on Debates is self-protective, toothless, and easily bullied by Trump and Republicans. It is. Trump is obviously trying to position Biden into looking like he has backed out of debates, so he, Trump, who knows he's in trouble mentally, does not have to go to them. And this letter, which translates to, "Why are you denying us the income that five debates would bring us?" shows you how detached from reality network management is. I moderated one debate, officially an AFL-CIO forum, during the Democratic primaries in 2007, and we had about a week of meetings beforehand designed to make sure that no actual illumination was provided by my questions, and no candidate so seriously challenged that if they were the one who won the nomination, they would be pissed at us. General election debates have a rich tradition in our American democracy. In each of those elections, tens of millions have tuned in to watch the candidates debating side by side in a competition of ideas. Name one debate in which the candidates held a competition of ideas. Name me one stretch in two campaigns full of debates. Name me one stretch in which Trump was debating ideas for say, a solid minute. Also, we, the undersigned national news organizations, Fox is not a national news organization. And NBC may have used to be a national news organization. Right now, it's just a badly run whorehouse. Which brings us back to the Trump campaign and media. And if you have not noticed, Trump has a new press spokesperson, a set of teeth named Caroline Levitt, Caroline with a K, no less, whose primary skill is that she can literally keep smiling while saying almost anything. Ms. Levitt claims to be 25, which is interesting because she also claimed to be 25 in the year 2022 when she ran for Congress in her native New Hampshire. She beat nine others in the Republican primary there, including a guy actually named Gilead. Gilead Town. Gilead Town. Caroline Levitt then lost the election to the Democrat by 9 points. On her resume, she's been a gopher for Fox News, a producer for Hearst, an assistant press secretary in the Trump White House, the spokesperson for Elise Stefanik, the center fielder for the St. Anselm College softball team, and then she went back to work for Trump last summer and at some point became his official spokesmodel. Spokesperson. Oh, and she's an idiot. On Newsmax. She's an idiot. Just listen. Just wait for this. Just listen.
Well, that's because Merrick Garland has completely weaponized our Justice Department. He is a henchman for Joe Biden. He is protecting him. The transcript in the Hur report was incredibly damning to Joe Biden. Not only did it prove
damning. Well, everybody has one of those. You probably said something like that before. Damning. It was just a one-shot deal, right? No.
And it also was extremely damning to him politically, as it showed what the American people see with their own eyes every single day, and that is Joe Biden can hardly speak. And so they gave us the transcript, but that's why they don't want to give...
Damning. It's damning. While she's claiming Biden can't speak. Entirely damning. Now, if that sounded as uncannily familiar to you as it did to me, I think I know why.
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
Thank you indeed, South Carolina. Just to finish it up and tie it all together, that unfortunate woman, Miss Teen 2007 competition, Caitlin Upton, used that moment as a springboard to working for Trump, signing with his modeling agency. Literally, she was a Trump spokesmodel. As to her successor, her philosophical daughter, this Trump spokesmodel, Miss Damning. While that is going to be Caroline Levitt's identity going forward, I mean, she might as well get T-shirts made and tattoos applied. Don't sleep on the other dilly in there. Henchman? He's the henchman? Henchman! Worst superhero ever. We have to fix American education. Also of interest here, a man who has been a Joe Biden advisor off and on for 35 years, who was his chief of staff until 1 year ago, was stupid enough to get up at a public event and start F-bombing Joe Biden's campaign strategy. complaining that he goes to too many events involving effing bridges. The tape was in the media's hands within an hour, and it is now a gift to the Trump camp. Ron Klain did this. Ron Klain, moron. That's next. This is Countdown.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
This is SportsCenter. Wait, check that. Not anymore. This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
In sports, Dateline Los Angeles, the interpreter did it. The New York Times reported last night that, as implausible as it sounds, Shohei Ohtani of the Los Angeles Dodgers really did somehow leave one of his bank accounts vulnerable to his interpreter and friend Ippe Mizuhara. Mizuhara did steal probably more than $4.5 million from him and wire it from Ohtani's bank account to the bank account of an illegal bookmaker, and that Mizuhara is now in negotiations to plead guilty to a slew of federal crimes. Times says Mizuhara has been under investigation by the IRS, Homeland Security, and the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of California. If, like me, you have a money person, or you have ever had an accountant, mine demands receipts from me if I spend like $220 on baseball cards off eBay. If, like me, you're still thinking, what the? This from my old friend Michael Schmidt of the New York Times may explain it a little better. Quote, authorities think they have evidence that Mizuhara was able to change the settings on Ohtani's bank account so Ohtani would not receive alerts and confirmations about transactions, according to sources. With skills like that, why was he gambling? Ahead of us on this all-new edition of Countdown, I have got to get that one restaurant in the lobby of my building to close, or at least remove the tables it puts out on the street. Years ago, I bounded out of my building and there was Lawrence O'Donnell literally darkening my door, and it's happened again. No, this time not the man we called Lode, but rather another cable news fraud. This one from Fox, a certified nitwit, a frequent star of Worst Persons, a six-time Worst Persons Award winner, including one memorable day when she won the bronze, the silver, and the gold. And I had to get past her to get back into my frickin' home. Next in things I promised not to tell. First, still more new idiots to talk about. The daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. We start with the bronze, worse, Joe Scarborough. Just when the Ronna McDaniel crisis was beginning to simmer down and you could turn on MSNBC and only worry about injuring yourself while rolling your eyes, what does Joey Scars do? He puts on video of a focus group of supposedly undecided voters, and the group is led by Mark Halperin. Mark Halperin is Scarborough's old pal and old Morning Joe contributor and the old political director of ABC News, who kind of lost his TV career when six different women came forward to accuse him of what was then called merely sexual harassment, but which in retrospect would now, in a couple of cases at least, be considered sexual assault. Rubbing his penis on one woman's shoulder in his office, rubbing it against another woman, grabbing another woman's breasts and kissing her in his office, and repeatedly propositioning, pressuring fellow employees for sex. He was fired, he was finished, and Joe Scarborough and MSNBC and NBC News and Rashida Jones, the president of MSNBC, and Cesar Conde, the chairman of NBC News, they all put him back on their network yesterday. I am so ashamed of what that place which I built has become. And I am so ashamed that you will hear nothing about this, about Mark Halperin, from any of its three primetime hosts whose careers there I launched and whose shows were spun off from mine. I am not ashamed of Scarborough, because he's always been an opportunistic scumbag, and trying to resuscitate Mark Halperin's career is so his brand. The runner-up, Maria Bartiromo of Fox News, whose show is called Morning Screech. Yesterday, she was hosting an idiot congresswoman from upstate New York. By the way, if you Google idiot congresswoman upstate New York, the first result is Elise Stefanik, but the second result is Claudia Tenney. And it was Claudia Tenney who was the one who said that when Ben Carson got caught buying the $31,000 dining set for his government office on the taxpayer's dime, Claudia Tenney, congresswoman of New York, said Ben Carson had been the victim of a conspiracy by the deep state. Yesterday, Tenney insisted that New York Governor Kathy Hochul needs to fire the district attorney Alvin Bragg before Trump's trial starts Monday because that's all they have left now. So Bartiromo said, Gabby Tenney is right, and the governor should fire Bragg because recidivism. And she added, we would like an answer. I'll call your office today, Kathy Hochul. I'd love an answer. Tune in tomorrow to Morning Screech when we'll hear Maria, her ear pressed to the phone, say, I'm still on hold. But our winner, Ron Klain, who until February 1st of last year was still President Biden's White House chief of staff, but has apparently since then forgotten. Ron Klain went to an event Tuesday night in New York held by the publication Democracy, a Journal of Ideas, and he spoke. And he praised the president, he praised the State of the Union address, he praised his presidency as a whole, and then he trashed the Biden campaign and Biden's political strategy. And he swore as he did so. And it was all captured on audio tape. Audio tape which, before everybody was in their Uber, was already in the hands of the website Politico. And Politico already had a story up by 11:09 p.m. Eastern because Ron Klain was apparently born yesterday. And now there is tape. Tape which the MAGAs can presumably obtain, or even if they can't, they can just quote it. In which Biden's longtime advisor says Biden is, quote, out there too much talking about bridges. And, quote, he does two or three events a week where he's cutting a ribbon on a bridge. And, quote, if you go to the grocery store and eggs and milk are expensive, the fact that there's a expletive deleted bridge is inaudible. And, quote, he's not a congressman. He's not running for Congress. And it, quote, doesn't get covered that much because, look, it's a expletive deleted bridge. Like, it's a bridge. And how interesting is a bridge? Look, these may all be valid criticisms. Is the president doing enough to address the checkout line economy, the housing economy? No, I don't think he is. But Ron Klain goes back with Biden to his presidential bid in 1988. He was chief of staff when Biden was vice president. He was Gore's chief of staff. He helped Obama and Hillary with debate prep. He was chairman of Gore's recount committee. Though, to be honest with you, if I were him, I would get a burner account and go in and edit that out of my Wikipedia page every goddamned morning. Ron Klain was not born yesterday, and yet he just blew it. It didn't cost Biden the election. Maybe the Trump people don't run with this stuff or quote it or play it, or even if they do, maybe it doesn't pop. But me, I have only one rule about Democratic candidates and Democratic campaign operatives, and it was the thing that turned me away from Hillary Clinton and towards Obama in 2007-2008. Criticize anyone, anytime, about anything, but do not leave weapons on the field for Republicans to use later against the Democratic nominee. I don't care how much you think it needs to be said. If, like the Clintons, you hand John McCain a plate full of weapons to use against Obama, screw you. You want to fight for the nomination? Do it. But it is not a fight to the death. The election is the fight to the death. In 209 days, we have an election that is almost literally that. It will decide whether or not we still have a democracy. And Ron Klain, a veteran of 36 years with Joe Biden, is out in public where anybody can record him F-bombing Joe Biden. Our last hope against a Trump dictatorship, and Ron Klain is potentially providing Trump campaign ads because he thinks the president is going to too many bridge openings. What would the Democrats do with comments like that, or worse, from Trump's past chiefs of staff? I don't know. Has this come up ever? Do we have comments like that from Mark Meadows or Mick Mulvaney or John Kelly? Oh, right. We do have those comments. What are we doing with them? We're using them to try to put Trump in jail for the rest of his life. And here's Ron Klain talking about it's an effing bridge. And how Biden isn't a congressman. And here's an idea for you, Ron Klain. It's a two-part idea. Part one is, shut the F up until after the election. I don't want to know you exist. Do not try to correct the record now. Do not campaign for Joe Biden and pretend this didn't happen. And the second part is, I don't trust you to do that, Ron Klain. So here's a firmer suggestion. Leave the goddamn country. You can come back in November. Till then, go to political purgatory somewhere and think about the damage you did. And again, if you want to say that crap to Joe Biden, I get the feeling you can still get an appointment to see him. Or at least you could until yesterday. And anybody else wants to say that to the president, go ahead, but don't do it in public and don't do it where somebody can record you, you moron. And don't act like you just fell off the turnip truck and had no clue that somebody might record you being glib and petty and picky and above it all when goddamn democracy is on the line. Think before you open your mouth, Ron. Better still, don't. Don't open your mouth. You're not enough of an adult to be trusted talking in public. Ron Klain, who just helped Trump, today's worst person in the world.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
To the number one story on the countdown and things I promised not to tell, and here we go again. There's two restaurants in the building in which I live. One is great. I eat there constantly. The other one, I ordered dinner to go from right after I moved in, years ago, like the week I moved in. I did it by phone directly, no app, and they volunteered to deliver it to me in the building. And they screwed it up. I mean, cook the food, put the food in the bag, take the food out your front door, take a couple of steps, then go through the front door into the lobby, hand it to the guy at the desk, and they'll send it upstairs to me. And it was an hour late. And it was the wrong food. And they were profusely apologetic because they'd screwed up a delivery to a guy who might, you know, buy food from them there every week or every day or twice on Sunday. So they did the whole order again, and again they sent the wrong food. And finally, this is now two and a half hours after I first called them, the general manager of the restaurant calls me and apologizes and says, "This one is on me. I'll be up with your tuna in a moment." And he literally shows up at my front door and proudly hands me the bag, and I laugh, and I say, "Well, while you're here, why don't I just check?" And I open it up, and it's a container full of Franks and beans. And that's not the worst part about the place. It's a tourist trap, which is fine. But it doesn't just draw visitors to the city. It draws the other kind of tourists. Those people who live here, but are not from here, and who have never really managed to differentiate the good restaurants from the tourist traps. As I have told you before, and will tell you again shortly, I came out one day and there sitting at a table on the avenue was Lawrence O'Donnell, who defines what I'm talking about, tourists who live here. I will spare some of the other gastronomic posers, the other not-quite-New Yorkers I have seen there. I will keep them anonymous, but I must tell you, and I think it will suffice, that when we lived together, this place was the favorite restaurant of Katie Turr. And apparently, of Harris Faulkner from Fox News. You know her. She's the anchor who made worse persons 2 days ago. A Biden spokesman slammed those attending a Trump fundraiser as billionaires, scammers, extremists, and racists, and Kayleigh McEnany reacted with outrage. Who was the racist that was there? Tim Scott was there, Vivek Ramaswamy, Woody Johnson, Wilbur Ross, Steve Wynn, and Harris Faulkner jumped in by saying, quote, "I want to say this. So they bring out the black surrogate to talk about racism because apparently the people that you just listed on that list, they're all black, but they're not Democrats," unquote. Which was apparently a bit of a surprise to Vivek Ramaswamy and Wilbur Ross, Steve Wynn, and especially the New York Jets fascist owner Woody Johnson. Harris Faulkner may be the champion of Fox self-unawareness. I mean, greater even than Greg Gutfeld, who has yet to understand that he's not at all funny. Or even Jesse Waters, who has never been told that he has an IQ of a plateful of Franks and beans. 10 years ago, Harris Faulkner discovered that a character in the awfully cute Hasbro Littlest Pet Shop toy, one of the characters was a hamster named Harris the Hamster. Harris Faulkner the Hamster. So, she sued Hasbro for $5 million. rather than making some sort of deal for the use of her name and some of the publicity and all of the goodwill, she sued them, and she settled only when Hasbro discontinued Harris Faulkner the hamster, and when she had managed to make millions of children cry. Then there she was, visible from half a block away at this restaurant because there was a lot of makeup involved, and she was talking so loudly she was drowning out Manhattan street traffic. And my dogs and I, we were just trying to get home, so I made sure to avoid eye contact. But as I passed her, I loudly addressed the dogs in my most announcerish voice. "Okay, guys, here we are, home in the same day." And I nodded to our doorman, and he followed me into the lobby. And before I could ask him if Harris Faulkner, the Fox propagandist, not the hamster, if Harris Faulkner had heard me, he said, "What was wrong with that woman? She stopped and pointed at you. Another fan, huh?" I reassured him she's not a fan. I don't know if she knows about this podcast or that Tuesday had been the sixth time she had made the worst person's medal list. Last September, she was on it after insisting that the Biden's dog commander might have been biting people because maybe they were giving him the cocaine that had been found at the White House months earlier. 2 weeks before that, she had complained that here it was 22 years after 9/11, and our government still hadn't killed the surviving terrorists. And that proved President Biden hated half of America and all the military families like hers. And never once did she seem aware that if she was angry at this president for not ordering the deaths of these guys who've been at Gitmo for two decades, why wasn't she mad at her guy, Trump, for not having ordered their deaths? And before I get to the time that Lawrence O'Donnell was at that same restaurant, I think at the same table, in fact, I want to note that Harris Faulkner once won the most exclusive honor I can bestow. She wasn't just a worst person. She was all the worst persons. We take you back to June 7th, 2023. Where were you and what were you doing when you first heard this? The bronze Harris Faulkner of Fox News, one of the most inexplicably self-righteous, shallow people in American media. She is a propagandist of Fox, quote, news, unquote. And she is as, just to pick an apt current analogy, as dim as a sunset during Canadian wildfire haze. Army brat. Her Twitter handle and her Twitter name are both in all caps. And she is ceaselessly holier than thou. And Fox now has given her a shot in Tucker Carlson's old primetime because the only two people left were her and me. By the way, remember Tucker Carlson? Anyway, Faulkner did not disappoint. She disappointed. She was complaining about this war on religion, which is really funny because the world gives religion more tolerance than anything else. I mean, it's not facts, it's beliefs, which are fine, but it can't and hasn't been proven. And almost all of the religions are based on books written by anonymous authors or rewritten by other anonymous authors. And yet we tolerate constant references to religion in our lives, from songs to interruptions for prayers to tax exemptions for churches. Anyway, that's not how she sees it. Harris Faulkner says you should say grace or whatever for meals at restaurants in public, and that once when she tried, they threw her out. Quote, "I've been asked to leave a restaurant for openly bowing my head in prayer hands in America." Sadly, she would not give a more specific address or a day when it happened or a witness, or would she answer any questions about it that followed from members of the media? Or didn't your religious figures over there say something about bearing false witness? The runner-up, why, it's Harris Faulkner of Fox News again. While she wasn't done chastising the wicked ways of 21st century America land, this is about the whole gender thing. Quote, "The Lord has determined I am a woman. My pronouns are USA. Once again, the jury is in. The Lord has also determined that conservatives will never understand what the hell pronouns actually are. Harris, you should ask the Lord for an education. But our winner? Wow, it's Harris Faulkner of Fox News! The trifecta! While she was instructing us when to pray and how to eat and what her pronouns are, I think she said D-U-M-B, all that time, the big banner graphic placed right across her holy, blessed condescension read, quote, American can and will be put back together again. American. Not America can and will be put back together again. American can and will be put back together. American. Harris, what kind of American doesn't check the graphics and lets her network misspell America? Why didn't you walk out of that place too, Faulkner? Today's worst person in the world! Early on the afternoon of Monday, May 23rd, 2016, I bounced out of my New York City apartment building, began to walk past the tourist trap brunch spot in the lobby, and froze. There, at one of the cramped outdoor tables, staring up at me in blank surprise, that must have matched my own staring down at him in blank surprise, was Lawrence O'Donnell. I decided to go silly. "Hey, get out of my house." He laughed. I laughed. It didn't seem forced. He introduced me to his companion, his daughter. "This, my dear, is Keith Olbermann. Keith started us all at MSNBC, and then he left, and..." And here Lawrence gave one of his long pauses, and we crashed it. I wanted to be generous. I started to politely contradict him, and I just couldn't do it. Yeah, pretty much. Anyway, about 30 seconds of courteous nothingness followed, and I wished the O'Donnells well, and then I left. It was the most pleasant experience I ever had with Lawrence O'Donnell. In fact, it might have been the only pleasant experience I ever had with Lawrence O'Donnell. After I finally convinced and bullied and blackmailed MSNBC management into letting Rachel Maddow become the regular guest host for my show, and she aced it, and then rightly got her own show, and she aced that, and became a star, I went looking for a new guest host. My first idea was a frequent guest we had named Chris Hayes. I didn't get far. Management had its own idea, and my input was not required. They wanted former Vermont governor and Democratic presidential hopeful Howard Dean. And Howard is a really smart guy and great on TV, but Howard had a bit of a teleprompter problem. One of my producers swears that Howard once read, "Good evening, I'm Howard. Dean, former governor of Vermont, this is Countdown." I do know whatever he did on the air, it was bad enough that one week when I was off and at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and a baseball news story broke and he was filling in for me, my producers called me there and asked me to come on from the streets of Cooperstown and be a guest on my own show just to help Howard Dean out. Anyway, their next idea was a guy who had been kicking around MSNBC since its founding in 1996. Lawrence O'Donnell was one of the original MSNBC friends. The MSNBC friends. Political pundits who sat on clear stools at a clear table or in a set designed to look like a booth at a coffee shop. No, I'm not making this up. Among the friends were Ann Coulter and Laura Ingraham, if you can believe it. Once or twice an hour, the rather CNN-like all-news coverage on MSNBC in its first couple of years would pause, and three or more of these friends would appear, chew over the MSNBC headlines, and then disappear. Lawrence O'Donnell was one of the friends. It was as bad as it sounds. Then Lawrence O'Donnell pretty much disappeared. You would see him on MSNBC as a guest every once in a while, but mostly he pursued his acting and producing career. He played President Bartlett's father on The West Wing, the one who beat him throughout college. Lawrence was very convincing. And then around 2008, we started getting pressure to bring him in as a guest on Countdown, like once a week or twice a week. I was not sure what that was all about, but he had been a Senate staffer, and he knew the healthcare debate and other wonky stuff pretty well. So I gave my assent for whatever that was worth. Not long after that, Lawrence came into my office. He really needed my support, he said, to get him more involved in MSNBC. He knew I had gone to bat for Rachel. And before her, I'd gone to bat for Tom Brokaw and for people like Chuck Todd and Chris Hayes and others who are now getting steady incomes from NBC. I don't remember his argument on his own behalf. I do remember I didn't have much of a reason to say no, and he wasn't asking me to do a lot, so I said yes. The next thing I knew, I was reading a memo announcing that Lawrence O'Donnell had been appointed as the new full-time guest host of Countdown. This was in the winter of 2009-2010, when my late dad was fighting so valiantly to stay alive after colon cancer and, more importantly, a series of infections. Dad had the immune system of an alien. The average white cell count in a healthy adult is between 4,000 and 11,000. One night, Dad's was at 33,000. And the doctors told me to prepare to make the call to let him go. They had one antibiotic left to try on him. The next morning, Dad's white cell count, which had been 33,000, was 8,000. Onward he fought. Unfortunately, he was 80 years old, and he had not exercised since Harry Truman was president, and eventually he ran out of Houdini tricks. I had been visiting him twice a day for 6 months while still doing Countdown and the NBC Sunday Night Football show, but now, as it hit late February of 2010, his bright days became fewer and farther in between, and the hope that was propelling me to keep being his full-time caregiver and Countdown's full-time host both began to fade. In the last 2 weeks of my dad's life, as the doctors tried all the long shot things, I asked MSNBC for a leave of absence. Finally, the inevitability became inarguable, and we let Dad go on Saturday, March 13th, 2010. My sister held his hand, and I read him his favorite Thurber story, and as soon as I finished it, he exhaled deeply and peacefully, and he died. I think I took another week off, maybe two. And I vaguely recall emails from friends at Countdown that I may have paid passing attention to, but I really didn't. Most of the staff, including people who came up from Washington, like Howard Fineman or Gene Robinson of the Washington Post, always friends to me, they attended my dad's memorial service. I believe Lawrence O'Donnell, who was, of course, filling in for me on Countdown, was there too, but maybe not. I do not remember. And then came the day when I went back to the office full-time and my assistant grabbed me. Both hands on my wrist. "You did not answer my emails," she said with a fervency she rarely exhibited. "For God's sake, do not ever leave me alone with Lawrence O'Donnell again." I snapped back to attention. Had he, you know, bothered her? "Not that way," she said, "but he's a son of a bitch. He treats me and everybody who isn't a producer here like dirt. And since you didn't read my emails, I just have to tell you this. He's trying to get you fired so he can take over Countdown. And if you think he's nuts, one of your senior producers is in on it too, with him." I have to admit, even now, of all the things I went through at that very, very strange place, MSNBC, even now, this story still shocks me. The senior producers of Countdown consisted of a guy who'd been a producer who booked satellite transmissions for MSNBC until I asked that he be promoted, and one was a guest booker for the daytime shows until I asked that she be promoted. Another was a line producer who was well-regarded only for his ability to time a show until I asked for him to be promoted. And then there was the old friend of mine who had been blown out of ESPN in a sexual harassment porn link email scandal and was headed back to college to start his career all over again until I asked that he be hired and then promoted. I did some digging, and I was going to confront O'Donnell about it when somebody told me he had tweeted something negative about me and about Countdown. So I got a hold of him, and I said this did not seem to be in keeping with MSNBC traditions and rules, you know, the ones about not peeing inside the tent. And he said, "What do you know about MSNBC traditions? I've been here since 1996. I never left and came back." So I went to my boss, the president of the network, Phil Griffin, the one who would not hire Rachel Maddow, and before I could say they'd have to get rid of him, Griffin said it was all academic. They were preparing the press release as we spoke for Lawrence's new show at 10 o'clock called The Last Word, and oh, by the way, Keith, two of your senior producers are going with him to run his show. If this sounds vaguely familiar to you, it is the plot of the pilot for the old Aaron Sorkin HBO series Newsroom. I was still friendly with Aaron then, so he actually asked, as I related this to him in real time in emails and phone calls, he asked if he could use it in the plot rather than just what he often did, which was to use it without asking. The problem was, none of this made any sense in the real world, although it made a pretty good pilot for Aaron Sorkin. In going into the 10 p.m. slot, Lawrence O'Donnell would be replacing a rerun of Countdown. And even if O'Donnell did much better in the ratings, much, much better, there was no way it could ever make enough money to make the move make sense. O'Donnell's new show would necessarily cost MSNBC between $10 and $15 million to produce every year. Didn't have anything to do with him. That was the cost. The Countdown rerun cost not $10, $15 million a year. It count however much they paid the guy who pushed the play button that fired up the videotape of the Countdown replay. Amortized. Later that day, a sympathetic NBC executive called me up and explained the move to me. First, Griffin was convinced O'Donnell was about to leave us and sign with CNN. I said, well, that's a good idea for everybody involved except CNN. Turned out CNN had not even talked to him, but Griffin did not know that. More importantly, Comcast had already finalized its agreement to buy NBC effective the following January. And as part of the deal, they were entitled to review what all the executives in the company had done. And they had already looked at MSNBC president Phil Griffin and discovered he had never done anything. In panic, Griffin told colleagues he had to launch a new show of his own immediately. This is the series Aaron Sorkin should have made. As to the producers who left my show to go with O'Donnell while my father was dying, one of them told me a couple of years after she left MSNBC for the last time, every day when I went into that last word office, I realized you were getting your revenge on me without even having to lift a finger. Lots of people I've worked with, probably a majority of people I've helped, have behaved like Lawrence O'Donnell because, remember, it's television. It is a mental illness. The comparatively healthy people are the ones who acknowledge it's a mental illness. But Lawrence O'Donnell was something special. A year before my dad died, almost to the day, in fact, I was in Los Angeles appearing on Bill Maher's show. And one of the other guests that night was the actress Kerry Washington. She was very nice to me, very sweet, a very big fan. And she asked to stay in touch. Sure enough, after my father died, after the memorial, after I was back at work, I had to go to his house for the first time since he had passed away. It was about as much fun as it sounds. In the car on the way back into New York City, the solemnity of it. Both my parents died within 11 months of each other. It really hit me, for some reason, for the first time, full force. And I was about to lose it when the car approached a billboard overlooking the West Side Highway in New York City. And whose big smiling face was on the ad on that billboard? Kerry Washington. And it flashed me right back to her kindness in L.A., and it helped me overcome this bump in my morning. So I wanted to drop her a note. Nothing big. Nothing suggestive. I wasn't hinting at asking her out. Just, you never know how you might help somebody in a time of crisis. Thanks for letting me smile. That was the whole message. I asked my assistant to figure out how to get it to her, and that was the end of it. Except, a week later, the fact that I wrote her a note wound up in a column written by Ann Coulter. I was astonished. How? Why? Ann Coulter? It was her usual, the brain doesn't quite work right kind of stuff. She implied I was hitting on Kerry Washington and said how stupid I had to be to not realize she was involved with somebody, and on and on and on. No mention of my father's passing or the Maher show or the billboard or her smiling face. I went back to my assistant and I said, hey, what on earth did you do with that note to Kerry Washington? And she said, oh, I gave it to this Lawrence O'Donnell guy. And I said, good God, why did you do that? And she said, well, he's dating Kerry Washington. I thought you knew that. I thought that's why you asked me to get it to her. So it wasn't hard to figure out from there. Lawrence had called his old friend from the old MSNBC Friends of 1996, Ann Coulter, and told her about the note, inventing whatever motive his jealous little mind could dream up. It should have gotten him fired from NBC, but unfortunately his boss was just as much of a 14-year-old emotionally as he was. And meanwhile, I had decided to get out of MSNBC anyway when the time was ripe. As it turned out, it ripened in January of 2011. I've told that story in other episodes, like 60 of them. It's kind of complicated. And since nobody ever actually asked me why Countdown, the TV show, ended, I've probably got another 60 episodes worth of information about that. Anyway, in 2015, since repeatedly over the following 10 years, there were overtures by both sides to bring Countdown and me back to MSNBC, in 2015, during the World Series, in fact, the then president of NBC News, Andy Lack, asked me to come back and do a new show at MSNBC and move to Los Angeles and have a co-host, a conservative, and not do any commentaries. And actually, this new show was somehow less appealing than it sounds. But the punchline of all punchlines is contained in what Lack wanted to call my new 2015 MSNBC show that never was. It tells you all you really need to know about The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell and MSNBC and O'Donnell's place in TV history and its demise and the end of MSNBC. NBC News President Lack was brimming with enthusiasm about this name that he had come up with for my new show. I've got the perfect title, Lack told me. We're going to call it The Last Word with Keith Olbermann. And I didn't laugh or guffaw. I just said, Andy, you have a show called The Last Word. The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell. Andy Lack now laughed. Hopefully not for much longer, I don't. I've done all the damage I can do here. Thank you for listening. Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel arranged, produced, and performed most of our music. Mr. Ray was on guitars, bass, and drums. Mr. Chanel handled orchestration and keyboards. It was produced by TKO Brothers. Other music, including some of the Beethoven compositions, were arranged and performed by the group No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN2, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. Our satirical and pithy musical comments are by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. Our announcer today was my friend Howard Feynman. Everything else was pretty much my fault. So that's Countdown for this, the 209th day until the 2024 presidential election and the 1,192nd day since Dementia J. Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Use the 14th Amendment and the not regularly given elector objection option. Use the Insurrection Act. Use the justice system. Use the mental health system to stop him from doing it again while we still can. The next scheduled countdown is tomorrow. Bulletins as the news warrants. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.